And now, insurance-minded speeches from GEICO.
It's a common expression, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. However, what if the horse's mouth is filled with useful insurance tools? This is the exact case with the GEICO app. Yes, the app is free and therefore a gift horse. However, look inside the app and behold, emergency roadside assistance, digital ID cards, bill pay. Get the GEICO app. Look it in the mouth. Get amazing services. Thank you.
Another edition of the No Long Twos podcast. As always, Mike Zavagno here in the lab in Philly, here with Jake Hurley. What's going on?
Yeah, not a whole lot, Mike. Just happy to be here yet again, like you said, in the lab in Philly, in the middle of the work week for me. Cut out 2 hours early day, or not early, just on time, actually, just not working 2 hours of overtime, but definitely happy to be back talking a little basketball, enjoying a nice mental break from the grind, so let's get into it tonight.
Yeah, hopefully we do this podcast a little better than the Cavs have looked over the last seven, but they're in a battle with the Kings right now, so we got that on in the background. And what we wanted to do today, I think earlier than some other people, but we're past the halfway point in the season right now, so we brought you the quarter point awards, which seem to be more in vogue than the halfway awards for some reason. But we did want to do our halfway awards, so we're going to start out with MVP, go all the way down through Defensive Player of the Year, and then I have some random questions at the end that we'll throw in there for fun. But I think one of the things, just generally before we actually get to the nominees and what we think so far, is that compared to our quarter poll that we took, this was a lot less interesting for me. I think that a lot of these races at this point are somewhat settled, I guess. I mean, obviously you can say that injuries and things like that will change it, but for many of the races, I mean, starting with Rookie of the Year and, you know, some of the other ones, I think that if there's not one candidate, there's really only two.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that sentiment as well. MVP might be surprisingly one of the most wide open races. Of course, we'll get into that in a little bit. But yeah, definitely to get a little bit ahead of ourselves, the Rookie of the Year race is all but over at this point. It's essentially the big process is to lose. So as long as he stays healthy, he will absolutely end up winning that award. But yeah, as you mentioned, the individual awards this year, especially at the halfway point in this season, they definitely seem to be not extremely close, or really two guys who are kind of going to run away with it, at least at this point.
Yeah, I think that potentially the All-NBA teams might be a more interesting endeavor, but I think that we're still too early for something like that, and it's really not something that we have to determine yet or that people really look forward to, especially, you know, getting down, you're talking about third-team All-NBA, who really cares at this point? So we'll start it off with MVP. For me, I think it's James Harden. I think that Harden has run away with it a little bit because of his play, a little bit because of Russell Westbrook's somewhat struggles, and mainly just because of team record. I mean, the Rockets are so much better right now than the Thunder are, and that kind of makes it hard for me when you're looking at their stats, Harden and Westbrook, them being so similar. When you look at the stats, you have Harden averaging 28.7 a game, 8.2 boards, 11.6 assists, 62% true shooting, first in win shares, second in VORP, fifth in PER, and he's scored or assisted on 56.8 points per game. You turn to Westbrook, he's at 30.6, 10.6, 10.4, 54 true shooting, first in PER, first in VORP, 12th in win shares, and then 54.3 points created per game. So with the numbers that are that similar, I think that team success should play a factor into this, and James Harden, I think, has been better for the Rockets than Russell Westbrook and the Thunder.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. James Harden is my pick as well. Obviously, statistically, those two guys that you mentioned, being Harden and Russ, they're way out in front of the pack as far as that's concerned. Obviously, Russ is averaging a triple-double. That's an incredible feat. Harden is, what, a rebound and a half away, essentially, from averaging a triple-double as well. So even though, yes, averaging a triple-double for the entire season, if Russell Westbrook is able to do that, it would be an incredible feat. But again, as you mentioned, it's kind of a wash as far as their statistics go. And I think that ultimately, for me, the deciding factor was team record as well. Another guy that I kind of tossed around, especially with the way that he's played over the past week and a half or so, and we got to watch it essentially firsthand on Saturday night, is Kawhi Leonard. Just with the way that he's been playing over the past, again, what, 8 to 10 games or so, just been absolutely killing it. Averaged 36 points a game this past week. Beat the Cavs in overtime where he scored a career-high 41. Just an incredible night from him, covering LeBron. A great two-way performance, as always, out of Kawhi. But I think that he's probably not a distant third, but he's a clear number three behind James Harden and Russ Westbrook in my book.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to get into the list, I think obviously you're going to start talking about Kevin Durant, and that's an interesting conversation to have as well based on kind of what you value. I mean, it's really hard for me when I think about this to logically say, okay, Kevin Durant goes to the greatest regular season team of all time. Sure, he's making a huge impact in terms of his numbers and what he's actually doing on the floor, but what value is he actually adding when it comes to team record? Not much. I mean, maybe that changes in the playoffs. Obviously, if they win the title, you can say he added value. But this is a regular season award. They're not going to win 74 games, you would likely imagine. So at that point, it's kind of one of those things where you're like, okay, sure, Kevin Durant, he's having a good year. But MVP, I wouldn't give it to him. First team All-NBA, I think, is a totally different story. I think that there are different qualifications for that, so that's definitely a possibility for a guy who's having a great year like him, but he's someone that kind of fits in an interesting part of that conversation.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that as well. We could go down the list a little bit more and get into guys' possible candidacies, but again, just kind of as we mentioned, especially with the MVP award, kind of is a two-man race at this point in the year. We'll see how that turns out past the halfway point of the season once we get to the three-quarters way and towards the end of the year. As the races are shaking up right now, this is kind of the way that it falls. And so then we'll move on now to our Rookie of the Year race, if you want to call it that. But essentially, we're just going to sing the praises of Joel Embiid here.
Yeah, I mean, what can you really say? The Sixers are a 7-3 in their last 10. They actually beat the Clippers without Embiid just last night. And the impact that he's making is really quite incredible. We spent a ton of time on this a couple weeks ago, so we're not going to touch on it for that long. Right now, he's at 19.8, 7.8 rebounds, 2.5 blocks, 58% true shooting, 24.1 PER, the best rim protector in the league. He's allowing 42.9% at the rim. He's made a huge impact on this team, especially on the defensive end, which is not something you expect to see from a rookie. I mean, the guy's incredible. What can you really say?
Yeah, the guy, as we talked about, the guy's basically turned around the Sixers' fortunes. He's made them a fun team to watch. He's got me staying up late past my very early bedtime. Yeah, very early bedtimes over here. Well before 10 o'clock for me, usually, with hours that I've been working.
Dad puts him to sleep.
Yeah. but yeah, I mean, I come home late and I stay up and I watch the Sixers game, and it's basically because of Joel Embiid and what he's done for this team. Really can't say enough about him. Obviously, we have said a lot about him already, but just a great year out of him. What other rookies are you looking at? Just not obviously for the award, but rookies who might be having some promising campaigns this year.
Yeah, I think that when you're looking at this, it's basically like Rookie of the Year if Joel Embiid didn't exist, or you could call it Rookie of the 2016 Draft Class. I've heard it called that as well. For me, I think it's still Malcolm Brogdon. I think he's made a strong impact in Milwaukee, especially given Dele's kind of up-and-down play. He really hasn't been the guy that they maybe expected him to be. I know a lot of us expected Dele to struggle outside of the LeBron circle, and just based on his on-off numbers last year without LeBron. But Brogdon's at 9.3 points per game, 4 assists a game. He's shooting 43% from 3. granted, not a ton of rookies that you can really talk about as having great years. I mean, I use NBA Math's TPA metric, which is total points added, essentially multiplying box plus minus times minutes, as something that I look at somewhat frequently. And there are only three rookies, Embiid, Brogdon, and Davis Bertans, who doesn't really get much burn on the Spurs, as guys who are even rating out positive in that metric. So this isn't the greatest rookie class. It's possible that there are guys like Brandon Ingram who could potentially have an impact as we move forward and, you know, will be good in the future. But we're not seeing a ton of impact from a ton of rookies right now.
Shifting away from individual player awards, we're now going to hop over to Coach of the Year. As far as my pick for Coach of the Year so far, I think it was a tough decision, kind of between two guys, at least in my opinion. The guy that I ultimately picked to come out on top was Greg Popovich.
I have Mike D'Antoni. I had Mike D'Antoni at the quarter pole. I have Mike D'Antoni now. The Rockets are 34-13, projected to win 59 games by 538. Through 47 games last year, they were 25-22, so they've seen a 9-win improvement from this pace that they were at last year. They have the third best offensive rating, 14th best defensive rating, and the third best net rating in the NBA. But actually, one of the things I thought was really interesting, courtesy of Connor Deckard and his friends at Synergy, is that they have both the best out-of-timeout offense and the best out-of-timeout defense in the entire league. So looking at something as specific as coaching, I know it's kind of difficult, but that was something that really stood out to me, as D'Antoni is a guy who's essentially adding value coming out of these timeouts more than any other coach in the league. But I do understand your coach Greg Popovich selection. He's obviously the best coach in the league. And I know Zach Lowe talked about this a little bit, but basically that the Spurs were expected by some to fall off. I mean, some of us who think the Spurs are the Spurs just kind of slot them in that second slot no matter what. But with guys like Pau Gasol and Tony Parker being minuses on the defensive end, Pop still has these guys with the third best defensive rating in the league, so that is something that does impress me.
Yeah, the Spurs this year, they're obviously second in the West. They're 36-9 right now, 20-4 on the road, which is, I believe, the best road start ever in the first 24 road games of a team's season. But as far as they go this year, two games back of the Warriors in that Western Conference, I didn't really expect them to be able to push the Warriors like they did last year, obviously pushing them to that 73-win season where they almost had to get 70 wins to claim that first seed. But this year, I definitely expected them to fall off, certainly on the defensive end, losing Tim Duncan. He wasn't, obviously, the presence that he had been earlier in his career, and especially throughout his prime, and even in his later years, but really last year, he was playing essentially on one leg. And LaMarcus Aldridge, he hasn't done everything Tim Duncan's been able to do, but he's been a solid anchor of that defense in the middle, obviously playing alongside Pau Gasol before Pau went down with an injury, with a broken hand. He's playing with a clear minus on that end, and Pop just keeps churning out 60-plus win seasons with this team. D'Antoni was the other guy that I certainly debated, just with how he's turned the Rockets around and how he's really handed over the keys to the offense to James Harden in his obviously high-octane offense and a run-and-gun, pace-and-space, whatever you want to call it. Just an incredible offensive system, and it fits exactly a player like James Harden. I mean, a guy like Steve Nash had the keys to that offense for a number of years in Phoenix, and James Harden is probably even better suited for that offense, and he's even better than Steve Nash running that offense.
Yeah, I think what you see, too, with D'Antoni and Pop are kind of two different styles of coaching in terms of how they make guys better. So we do have D'Antoni, who essentially has come to the league this year. One of the things that he's done, and Nick and I talked about this on the last pod, is that the Rockets have guys spotting up 2 to 3 feet behind the three-point line. Mike Prada from SB Nation did a good piece on this if you want to check it out in more depth. But essentially, he's stretching the floor even more than teams already are with shooters, and it's just giving a guy like Harden, who can get into the lane at will, more space to operate. And so I think that that's something that D'Antoni has brought that we weren't really seeing from any coaches last year. You compare that with a guy like Pop, who they get Dwayne Dedman off of essentially the scrap heap from Orlando last year. They have Davis Bertans, who's also making an impact. And once again, these are guys who you don't really think much of them if you look at Patty Mills when he came from Portland. He probably was out of the league if he's not signing with the Spurs. And Pop makes these guys not only like rotation players, but effective rotation players in the league. So you have a guy like Pop, and he's almost guaranteed to make any guy that they want to sign better. Moving along to sixth man of the year, I think this is another one where I have one guy, I could see a case for maybe one other guy, but for me, Eric Gordon, giving the award to another Rocket, that's three of them for me, but Eric Gordon, 17.6, 2.7, 2.8, shooting 39% from three. He's got a 58 true shooting percentage, and he's taking 65% of his shots from beyond the arc.
Yeah, Eric Gordon's a guy that I'm going with as well for my sixth man of the year, just with the production that he's been able to have off that Rocket bench, and really what he's been able to do incredibly, and where the Rockets really struggled last year is buoying those non-James Harden units. Just with how he's been able to shoot so well off the bench, provide a secondary scoring option for them. He doesn't provide the ball handling, obviously, that Harden does, but being able to spot up, and for a time he was actually leading the NBA and made three-pointers this year ahead of Steph until he was passed about a week or two ago. But I think for me, it's a no-brainer that Eric Gordon's my guy, just again with what he's been able to do and really revitalizing his career on this Rockets team.
Yeah, the Rockets are 5.1 points per 100 possessions better with him on the floor, but like you said, they're actually 6.4 points per 100 possessions better when he's on the floor and James Harden is off. So that's something, as you said, that's really been a problem for this team, really was a problem for this team to start the year as well when Eric Gordon was actually in the starting lineup. Since Patrick Beverley has returned, Eric Gordon moved to the bench, and he's really helping this Rockets team essentially get to where they've become as one of the powerhouses in the West. Another guy that I think deserves to be recognized, not on the same level as Gordon, but that's Enes Kanter. Kanter is averaging 14.6 points, 6.7 rebounds, but he has a 25 PER. He has the highest assist percentage of his career, and he has nearly a 27 usage rate. So the Thunder are playing to a standstill with him on the floor, which is essentially plus 10 with him on the floor with Russell Westbrook, minus 10 with him on the floor without Westbrook, which is understandable just because Westbrook is the engine of this team. So I think that's why Kanter is not in the conversation as much as he might be otherwise. But I think he is having a good year, and watching him play, I think he's really developed as a passer, which has been crucial for these Oklahoma City units that really only have Russell Westbrook as a primary creator.
Yeah, I think Kanter's really going to carve out a great role for his entire career. If he peaks basically where he's at now as a sixth man, as a instant offense type of guy, a high motor offensive rebounding type that he can average 15 points, 6, 7, 8 rebounds a game, and just provide an offensive spark off the bench where you can run an offense through him. He can crash the glass. He can even step out and shoot a couple threes. But I think that that's something that he's really come into his own as opposed to where he was at when he was in Utah earlier in his career, where he struggled to get minutes. He struggled on the defensive end. He struggled on the offensive end because he couldn't really get or stay on the floor just because he was such a liability. But I think he's really come into his own in Oklahoma City. And as you mentioned, he's not going to win this award, but he certainly deserves some recognition.
Yeah, and he's never going to be a good defender. I think that we've kind of accepted that and moved on a bit. I mean, you're not really looking to Enes Kanter to do anything more than try on that end. He just doesn't have the tools that you would expect out of someone who can play good defense. But his offensive production, I think, is doubly important this year because of Kevin Durant's absence from the team. He's someone who is really a secondary scorer alongside Westbrook when Steven Adams is on the bench. And that's important because this Thunder team does struggle at times to get buckets. If Victor Oladipo isn't having a great night, that's especially true. And so even though Kanter is not a great defender, it's really important for this specific team that he brings a skill set that does involve getting buckets.
Moving from sixth man of the year, now we're going to go to another award that's pretty much all but decided, and that's most improved player. Mike, who you got for this one?
Yeah, it's Giannis. I mean, there's no point in even discussing this award, essentially, just because he's so much better than he was last season. He's shown growth in literally every area, and he's gone from being a good player to one of the top 10 players in the league, probably. He's third in VORP, sixth in PER, seventh in win shares. But if you're looking at pure improvement here, he's added 9 points in PER. His true shooting percent is up 4 from last year. And he's up 6.7 in box plus minus. And then when you look at counting cumulative stats such as win shares and VORP, he has the exact same number of win shares that he did last year through an entire season. And he actually has one more value over replacement than he did at the end of the season last year. So he's so much better. He's averaging 7 more points per 36 minutes. He's averaging essentially 2 steals and 2 blocks on the year. I mean, he's been absolutely ridiculous, and this is an improvement unlike really almost any that we've seen in the league.
Yeah, I actually saw a tweet this morning from at KD's Intellect, and the stats as far as Giannis's his more traditional counting stats this year versus last year. So he's up in all of these categories. He's up 6.8 points a game, 1.1 rebounds a game, 1.1 assists per game, 0.6 blocks, and 0.6 steals a game, up 2.7% field goal percentage, 4.2 three-point percentage, 6.3 free throw percentage, and he's only down in one traditional counting stat, and that's minutes per game. He's down 0.4 minutes per game from last year and throwing up those incredibly high numbers at the rate that he's doing this year, and it's just astounding.
Yeah, I mean, he's unbelievable, and he's one of those guys who we haven't had the chance to see him, but I think he's one of those guys where if he's in your town and you have the opportunity to go to that game, I don't see how you miss that game right now. I mean, there's a few guys like that in the league. I think LeBron is obviously one of them. Steph Curry is probably one of them. But Giannis is in that category of guys who are just absolutely freaks, like totally different level, and guy that you really should see in person. And I hope that we get that opportunity. I'm not sure if the Sixers and Bucks play this year between now and then, but if he is, I really would like to go see him in person. And another thing, when you're looking at this, like you are Rookie of the Year, if you were to kind of remove Giannis from the equation, I think that it's worth discussing a bit, just because the award is basically over, who you might have in terms of someone that would essentially finish second if second existed. And for me, I think that guy's actually Giannis's teammate, Jabari Parker.
Yeah, I think that Jabari's done a lot this year to improve his game. I know he's a guy that we actually talked about at the quarterway point in the season who might deserve some consideration, and also in our possible all-star picks this year. But Jabari's averaging over 20 points a game this year. And one of the things coming into this year that a lot of people questioned if he'd be able to really stick in his offensive game is improving from the three-point line. Last year, he only made, what, 6 or 9 nice three-pointers on the year. But this year, he's up 15% as a whole from three-point range. Last year, he was 26% on the year, so obviously a dramatic improvement on that end. He's really established himself as a force on offense, and it's something that we notice, and I think we've actually mentioned this on the pod, but he's a great in-game dunker. He's a lot more athletic than I think people give him credit
deceptively
for.
Deceptively athletic.
Yeah, very deceptively athletic, low-key thick, but Jabari Parker really is a great offensive player. Definitely extremely lacking on defense, and I think that's kind of being nice about it. He doesn't have a true position like a lot of guys on that Bucks team don't. We're not really sure if he's a 3, not really sure if he's a 4. He's probably not big enough to be a 4. He's not quick enough to be a 3. So he's kind of in that tweener position. But if you're going to do what he's able to do on the offensive end, there's no way to keep him off the floor, and he's going to be a productive and great player in this league for a long time.
Outside of the Sixers, I think that nobody in this league has had their fortunes change more dramatically this season than the Bucks, because you come into this year, you have Chris Middleton, who was your second best player last year, going to miss extended time, maybe coming back in March, and you're sitting there and you're thinking, okay, we went from a team that was being picked by many to make the playoffs to a team that's now potentially going to finish 10th or 11th. And all of a sudden you have these two guys take tremendous leaps, both Giannis and Jabari. And now you have Chris Middleton potentially scheduled to come back after the All-Star break, maybe sometime in March. And this is a team that could easily make a run for 5th, maybe, in the East, something like that. And you wouldn't be surprised. I mean, the East has been so bad in the past week that it wouldn't shock me at all if you know, the Bucks get Chris Middleton back and they go on a little mini run here. I mean, the Cavs are struggling, the Raptors are struggling, the Celtics are struggling, the Bucks actually currently are struggling. The only teams that are really playing well in the Eastern Conference right now are the Hawks, the Sixers, and the Wizards.
The last award that we're going to cover tonight is going to be Defensive Player of the Year. I think that this one is another one of those, surprisingly, that's pretty much a two-man race at this point. Or actually, this one might be a little more open. It might be three guys who are in contention for this. But the guy that I have as far as the award for Defensive Player of the Year goes at the halfway point of the season is Draymond Green.
I have Draymond Green as well. I think that Rudy Gobert would be the other guy in your two-man race there. And unfairly or fairly, I think Kawhi does get judged against his past self, and he has not played as good of defense this season. So I think that Kawhi is going to drop out a little bit on people's ballots. But my thought with Draymond Green here is that he's allowing 49.4% shooting at the rim, which is fifth in the NBA, 5.6 attempts per game. Rudy Gobert, who's hailed constantly for his rim protection, averaging 47.2 allowed on 7.9 attempts per game, which is third in the NBA. That difference of 2% and the fact that Draymond Green is like 6'2 is something that I think is of massive importance, just because when you look beyond Gobert's rim protection, he's not doing anywhere close to as much as what Draymond Green is doing for you in terms of his defensive versatility.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, and I think that that's ultimately what decides it for me as well, because Gobert is obviously going to protect the paint. He's going to guard your center because he is a center. He's 7'2". He has a 7'7 or 7'9 wingspan, whatever it might be, and he's great at what he does. He's going to anchor one of the best defensive units in the league. He's going to block a lot of shots. He's going to affect basically every shot at the rim. But Draymond Green, on any given night, could guard any position 1 through 5. He can defend LeBron James. He can defend DeMarcus Cousins. He can switch out onto Kyrie Irving and keep up with their quickness. He can match those guys' strength. He's barrel-chested, so he's obviously able to handle those bigger-bodied guys, guys who are taller, and he just doesn't get moved off the block. He's quick enough as far as his footwork goes to be able to stay with quicker wings or stay with guards, especially on switches, which the Warriors constantly ask him to do, and he's really essentially the engine that makes that team go. Without Draymond Green, the Warriors are a completely different team. Granted, they're still probably the most talented team in the league. Without him, they're probably still the favorite to win the NBA title, but they're a completely different team without him, and I think what he does for that team is absolutely integral to their success.
Yeah, and one of the things that I have written down here, and synergies, defensive statistics, just like anyone's defensive statistics, aren't perfect at this point, and you know, as we get there, I think it'll be more illustrative, but right now, Synergy has Draymond Green ranked in the 82nd percentile guarding the big man in the pick and roll. Rudy Gobert ranks in the 33rd percentile guarding the big man in the pick and roll. And I think that that does first speak to Draymond's versatility, his ability to switch, his ability to, you know, get up into guys. But also, some of it is the Jazz's system. Sports by Stats wrote a piece about how the Jazz's system is a little different than most because Rudy Gobert sits so far back on the pick and roll, which I think allows him to give up a lot of open or somewhat contested mid-range jumpers. And you look at a guy like DeAndre Jordan, who plays in a similar system, but he's much more in tune in terms that he's just a step or a half step higher. And I think he takes away a lot of those shots. And I think if you're looking at Gobert's one defensive place where he can improve, I think that it's just getting up a little bit more, guarding those pick and rolls, cutting down that space a little bit, making it so when he does get a hand up on those jump shots, it's going to be effective, and he doesn't have to step at you because he thinks that you're going to pull up, and then you get a hesitation dribble, and you see guys blowing by him sometimes. So just because of that, I think that Rudy Gobert has been amazing this year, but Draymond Green, he's going to give you so much more on the defensive end in terms of what he's able to do. Can guard basically all five positions, like you said, kind of like my guy James Johnson. James Johnson, four position guarder. I'm just saying, but Draymond Green,
noted self-proclaimed LeBron stopper, James Johnson.
Draymond Green never proclaimed himself to be a LeBron stopper. So if you're James Johnson, you're Deshaun Stevenson. You're in a pretty solid class there. But yeah, I think Draymond Green in an award race that's probably one of the closest that we have has this award for me right now, but I could see it changing over the second half of the season. On the second half here, we're just going to do a couple quick hitters, maybe a little bit more fun questions before we kind of end for the night, but wanted to tackle a few more interesting predictions that we may have for the end of the year. So the first one that I have for you here is Jonas Valanciunas, 28 assists right now. Hassan Whiteside, 29 assists right now. Who finishes the year with more assists?
That's a great question, and it's pretty comical that these two big plotting dinosaurs of big men just don't really pass the ball. They're not the guys in their offense. With that being said, I'm going to have to go with Jonas just because I think he's surrounded by a little bit better shooters in Toronto. I think he plays with a better unit up there, so I think he might have a couple more opportunities to get some assists, maybe some garbage time assists if the Raptors are big in games, but I'm going to go with Jonas by like 2 assists.
I actually was going to originally make this Whiteside versus Andre Drummond, and then I checked, and Andre Drummond has like 40 assists on the year, and so that was a little high for this tally, so it ended up being Jonas. Since you're going with Jonas, and this is just a ridiculous endeavor, I'll be going with Whiteside here. Maybe we'll throw a dollar on it, and we'll see what happens by the end of the year. So this will be an interesting race that we should keep an eye on. Next question I have for you here, we're flipping from assists to turnovers. Right now, George McGinnis has the record for most turnovers in a season, 422 in 1974-75. Russell Westbrook is on pace for 449. James Harden is on pace for 472. Do both of these guys pass him, set the record for most turnovers in the year, and could we see either of them approach 500?
The fact that those guys even have a chance to commit 500 turnovers in a year is just absolutely amazing. I think that really speaks to what those guys are asked of by their teams just in their respective offenses. I'm going to go out on a limb here. I'm actually going to say that Russ Westbrook ends up with more turnovers by the end of the year than James Harden. I don't think either of them get to 500, but I do think both of them surpass George McGinnis's record, but I do think that Russ is going to end up with more than Harden.
George McGinnis, I don't know if he's alive or dead. I don't really know much about him, but I'm sure that if they do pass him for 422, he'll probably pop champagne because I don't think anybody remembers this guy for literally anything else. So, George McGinnis, if you're out there, you should be watching this because this is something that could clear your names from the history books. Another one on turnovers I have for you, Ray Williams of the 1982-83 Kansas City Kings holds the record for most turnovers per 100 possessions in NBA history with 7. Joel Embiid right now on pace, 7.3 turnovers per 100 possessions. Do we see a third turnover record set this season?
You know what? I trust the process. I do not think that Joel Embiid will surpass that per 100 possessions. I think he cleans up his act a little bit more in the second half here. I think he plays a little bit tidier of a game here. And actually, to go back to the previous point, that's George McGinnis, not Jeff McGinnis. For those of you who remember Jeff McGinnis of Cavs teardrop from 18 feet away fame, not that McGinnis, but no, I don't think Embiid is gonna surpass that 7 per 100 possession turnovers. I know that's a lot. I know that the way that the Sixers use him and just with his high usage rate, there's a great chance of it, but hopefully he cleans it up a little bit more in the second half here.
I'll trust the process as well. I'll go with under 7 turnovers per 100 possessions. I realize I didn't answer the last question either, so I am going with Westbrook and Harden to surpass the infamous George, not Jeff McGinnis. Great headband on that guy. Frustrating player, but I'll stick with Harden to have more than Westbrook as well, so we'll see what happens from there. Moving along from turnovers, Golden State Warriors, best team in the NBA, recently move to first in offense, first in defense. Do they finish the year first in both?
You know, I think that they do end up finishing first in both. I think early in the season, obviously they lost the first game against the Spurs. They struggled a little bit. A lot of people were kind of, I don't think a lot of people were extremely surprised by that. But then as the weeks went on, people were kind of like, ah, they were in a little bit of a lull. And now they're really starting to hit another gear. Durant's making it look extremely easy on the offensive end. Steph is starting to shoot a little bit better, but not as well as Seth Curry, not Steph Curry. Yep, double check that. Seth Curry is the better shooting Curry so far this year. But I don't think there's any doubt in my mind that Golden State finishes first on both ends. I think that after what they did last year, there's not really a whole lot for them to push themselves to do in the regular season. But I think if they were to finish first in both offensive and defensive rating, that would be an incredible statistic. I think Kerr would love to do that. Not that that really matters, but I think that's something that they could push for this year in the regular season.
Yeah, I think it's no surprise that they're first in offensive rating. I'm pretty sure that every single person who follows the NBA would have predicted that going into the season. They passed the Raptors, who were hanging on for quite a while, given the fact that they largely operate an inefficient offense. I mean, they only had 10 assists on 38 buckets last night. That's pretty common for them. So I do see the Warriors finishing with the best offense in the league. I don't, however, see them finishing with the best defense in the league. I'm going to bank on the Jazz getting healthy, staying healthy. I'm going to take the Jazz to finish this year with the best defensive rating over the Warriors. Sticking on the topic of defense and on the topic of the process, the Sixers right now ninth in defensive rating. Is there any way that this team sticks in the top 10?
You know, I think that that's a great question, and I actually didn't know that they had cracked the top 10 in defensive rating. I don't think that it's going to be sustainable. I think what they've done over the past 10 games is incredible. I think Embiid has really anchored this team both offensively and defensively. Obviously, just everything that we've talked about recently. But I don't think that it's going to be sustainable just with this young team. I think that they probably make at least one trade at the deadline, whether it's getting rid of Okafor. Granted, that doesn't really affect them on defense at all.
might help.
In reality, they might finish top two if they get rid of Jahlil Okafor. If you're listening, Mr. Okafor, I'm sorry. Please don't slap me.
He was hacked. Come on.
But I think if they trade a guy like Noel, or even if they possibly traded a veteran in Gerald Henderson, I know there hasn't been any talk of that, but certainly a team could look to go after a guy like Gerald Henderson just with wings being at a premium, and the Sixers may be looking to sell high there. But I don't think that they finish, again, in the top 10. I think Ben Simmons, when he does come back, I think that he's going to be a little slow on the defensive end. They're certainly going to give him minutes, so I think that that'll affect their defensive units. But it's really a great surprise to see them in the top 10 so far at the halfway point of the season.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think that they finished top 10. Part of that for me is honestly that Joel Embiid just doesn't play every game. I mean, if Joel Embiid was playing 33, 34 minutes every game with the way that he is playing on defense, I think that they would have a chance of actually finishing within that top 10, given how good of a rim protector he has been. But like you said, when he sits, we see Jahlil Okafor getting minutes. That's not going to help the defense. Ben Simmons, when he comes back, probably also won't be playing every night either. We don't really know exactly how he'll be on the defensive end, but he was abysmal in college. I know people talk a lot about his defensive potential. Coach David Thorpe called his hands the best hands he's ever seen since Jason Kidd in terms of scouting, but I think that Ben Simmons, until he learns to get into a defensive stance consistently, he's not a guy that we're going to say is an elite defender in this league. I mean, you look at a guy like Andrew Wiggins, his defensive potential was touted so often coming out of college, and people thought that he might actually be a better defender than he was on offense in the NBA, and that's obviously not been the case. He's one of the worst defenders in the league, so with a guy like Simmons coming back, I also think that that does hurt the defense, so I'll take the Sixers out of the top 10 as well. Some people prevent points, some people score them. Right now, we have 10 guys in the NBA averaging over 25 points per game. Quick rundown, that's Russell Westbrook, Isaiah Thomas, James Harden, Anthony Davis, DeMarcus Cousins, DeMar DeRozan, Damian Lillard, Kevin Durant, LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard. At the expense of sounding like Bill Simmons, I'll stop reading lists of players, but will we finish with more or less than 10 players averaging 25 points per game on the year?
You know, for that question, I'm not going to put all my chips on black. I'm not going to put them all on red. I'm going to ride with green here. I think that it's going to be even 10 for the end of the year. Basically, the guys on the border here. So Kawhi is at number 10 at 25.5 so far. Steph is number 11 at 24.6. Kyrie is number 12 at 24.5. And then Jimmy Butler is also 24.5. I think I will say this, though. I think one of the guys in the top 10 now will drop out of the top 10, but I think one of the three guys who's at 24.5 will jump into the top 10. But again, I think we finish right at 10 by the end of the year.
That's interesting. I don't know. I'm looking at this list now. I'm trying to think of the guy who would most likely fall out of it. I'm not asking you to make a pick here, but if you had to, who would you think that would be?
Gun to my head, I'd say Kawhi. I think that obviously his scoring boost over the past week and a half or so, I think that's propelled him above 25. I don't, obviously him averaging 36 a week isn't sustainable, but I just don't see him averaging 25 a night all year. I think Pop might actually keep him out a couple games, and truthfully that may possibly help him just playing in less games if he is able to be successful and be well rested down the stretch. But I think if one guy's going to move up, it's going to be Steph, just because he's starting to shoot a lot better. He struggled a little bit earlier in the year. Obviously, compared to last year, you can't really improve on those shooting numbers, but I think that he's going to improve on the way he started, and I think that Kawhi slows down a little bit. I think that everyone's going to be right around that mark. You may, truthfully, if you were to make me to pick the over or the under, I would go with the over. I think that there's probably a better chance of it being more than 10 guys than less than 10 guys, truthfully.
I'm with you on the over. I think that if I were to pick one guy to fall out, I'm actually picking LeBron. I think that if anyone is going to slow down, it's going to be LeBron solely because of minutes. Ty Lue today kind of talked about how this was the plan to play LeBron 38, 37 minutes a game and then slow down as the second half goes along. So if we see LeBron starting to play 30 or 31 minutes a night, I think that he could easily fall below 25. But I do see a guy like Steph, he's been playing better, like Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler's actually averaging 20.5 points a game since he had a bout with the food poisoning that's also struck Kevin Love. So one of those things where you lose some weight, I think it's much harder to score. And so Jimmy Butler could move back up. And I don't know. I mean, I think that I would probably maybe go with 12. We'll see. I'm not entirely confident in that pick. But, you know, when life's too short to bet the under.
Yeah, we're big over guys. Sorry, Nets.
One of the guys that was on that list, Isaiah Thomas, averaging 10.1 points per game in the fourth quarter this year. Do you think that he can stay over 10?
I think that the King in the Fourth is the stupidest nickname that I've ever heard for someone, and it's pretty perfect that it comes from Boston fans. Honestly, not a surprise at all that that they created that nickname for him. I don't think a guy who's like 5'6", as much as I love Isaiah Thomas, deserves that nickname. Yeah, sure, he's the King of the Fourth, but they're better in the fourth quarter without him on the floor. I don't think that he's going to continue that average throughout the rest of the year, averaging 10 points plus in the fourth quarter. I know about 2 weeks ago he was at, 9.3, I think, in the fourth quarter. So he's really had a couple great games recently that have improved that average. He's obviously going to be the Celtics' leading scorer. He's averaging over 28 a game this year. But I think that he does drop off a little bit in the fourth quarter, especially in crunch time where he's been pretty astounding this year, shooting almost 60% essentially in the last 3 minutes of games. I think that those numbers are more likely to regress to his mean of around 45-46% from the field. I think he's probably right around that 9.5 points.
Yeah, I'm going to take the under as well. I think this is just an opportunity for both of us to talk negatively about a Boston sports player, to be honest. I mean, the thing is that whether you want to talk about his points per game in the fourth quarter or not, Isaiah Thomas is making his team worse in the fourth quarter. Not actually, that's not true. But, I mean, he can't really defend anyone. It's not really his fault. He's just kind of too small to ever be an effective defender. He's literally the worst defender in the league by RPM. And it's not something that he can improve on, because he can work as hard as he wants, but guys are still going to shoot over him like he's not even there. And his standing reach is so short that it's really not impacting anybody's shot.
I would love to see the Hornets and the Celtics match up in the playoffs in the first round, maybe a 6-3 matchup there. I would love to see Isaiah Thomas game 7, ball in his hand at half court, about to ISO, and then Michael Jordan is sitting there right on courtside basically, and like he did to Muggsy Bogues back in the day. He says to Isaiah Thomas, shoot it, you fucking midget. And then Isaiah Thomas proceeds to miss from there, and then Hornets move on to the second round. I think that that would be an incredible ending to a first-round series. I love Isaiah Thomas. I could give him a hard time because I'm a Cleveland fan. We're Cleveland guys here, and he deserves some backlash here. I think he deserves to be an All-Star this year, but I don't think that he deserves as much praise as people are giving him, especially Boston sports fans.
Classic, especially Boston sports fans there. Let's go Falcons. Final question here. Coach Luke recently, today, made some noise saying that he doesn't agree with tanking. He basically said that he thinks the Sixers are still very far away from contending and said that he's not a fan of tanking. I'm not sure if his mind is still in Golden State, if he's looked at his roster or exactly what's going on here. But question is, do you think that the Lakers end up keeping their top three protected pick this season, or do you think it actually transfers over to the Sixers? Fans here really want that pick. They're hoping you say they don't keep it.
You know, I would love the Lakers to have to give up that pick. I think Luke Walton, the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree, being Bill Walton's son. I think Luke Walton has his head in the clouds, if you will, a little bit. I think that the Lakers end up keeping their pick. Luke's heart is in the right place. His mind is maybe what he thinks is in the right place, but I think it's somewhere else. But I think the Lakers keep their top three pick. I think that if push comes to shove, I think the top of that organization might have a little more pull than he does as far as that goes. I know that he wants to bring back that winning culture in LA, but I just don't really see it happening. It's probably the best for them if they finish with a very bad record, obviously, and they get to keep that top three pick. So I think ultimately the Lakers do keep that pick rather than falling out of the top five, unless the lottery gods fall in the Sixers' favor.
Prop 64. That's something that Luke Walton might be enjoying. Klay Thompson might be enjoying. You never know, but I'm sure that they were okay with that. So my point here, I think that you're right. I think that the Lakers as an organization, when you look at their team and you look at some of the other teams at their level, they don't have that franchise changing guy on their roster, right? You're not looking at them. They don't have a Kristaps Porzingis. They don't have a Joel Embiid. And so you have guys like Julius Randle, who I think is fine, but he might honestly be their best player right now. And that's not good enough. And so they might make a move at the deadline to Lou Williams, guy on a good contract. He can get buckets, might be a good sixth man for someone, could be a good sixth man for the Cavs. Don't think the Cavs could ever get him. Another guy, Nick Young, who people thought was going to be out of the league, having a great year, could opt out of his contract at the end of the season. So they might be looking to move him as well to a team that could use shooting. So the more that they play these young guys, it's more likely that they are going to fall out of having a decent record. They should tank. I mean, this is allegedly, as we've said, a great draft. They need good players. I'm not even sure what D'Angelo Russell is right now, but he's not necessarily someone that I think is going to be a star in this league either. I was trying to think actually today what his trade value would be, and I don't even know. Maybe one first round pick? I'm not entirely sure what you give up for a guy who's been frequently injured, can't really get to the rim, he's not explosive, he can't jump, which I think is a big problem. He's a decent shooter. I don't think he's going to be a great defender. So the Lakers are in a weird spot, and if they don't tank, I think they're just doing it wrong. Alrighty, I think that does it for this week's edition of the No Long Twos podcast. As always, thanks for joining us, everybody, and thanks, Jake.
Oh, no problem. It was my pleasure, as always. I started off a little bit slow, but things got rolling there towards the middle, especially towards the end. Had a little fun with it, but certainly my pleasure, as always. Be sure to follow us both on Twitter again, myself at jhurls23, Mike at mzavagno11, and then be sure to also follow the podcast on Twitter at nolongtwos.
Yeah, do that. Look for something from me, hopefully in the next week, I guess, on Fear the Sword. I had something on the Cavs pick and roll coverage. this past week, looking to write something about Kyle Korver sometime in the near future in terms of how the Cavs are fitting him in. Check out Justin Rowan's piece on Fear the Sword today if you haven't already on how the Cavs might change their lineups. That's been a big issue for the Cavs lately. I wrote something for B-Ball Breakdown in the past week as well on Devin Booker and his development recently. So if you didn't see that, you can always check that out as well. So thanks everybody for following along, checking us out. Really appreciate you continuing to listen and hopefully share with people you know. We'll be back next week.
Trust the process.
Understand that I'm more than simply a hype man for this rap group, just like Geico is more than just a company that can save you money. Geico also has fast and friendly claim service, so they can help you when you need it most. And while I do love being a hype man, I also love reading for children's audiobooks. Like Little Bo Peep, she lost a sheep, and she don't know where to find them. Yo!
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
There is more to me, Queen Eliara of Elfgard, than my elven magic. Just as there's more to Geico than saving you money, Geico also gives you 24/7 access to licensed agents online, on the phone, or on the Geico app. And while I am a mighty elf queen, I am also a mighty big fan of barbecue potato chips. Minions! More smoky mesquite.
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.